Yes, dear friends, it's time once again for another edition of Rockin' the Boat. My name's the V-Man. It's 5:30. I'll be here for the next 30 minutes. And today on the program, we'll be discussing the upcoming mini ministerial in Montreal. It's a mouthful. The WTO meeting once again in North America, this time in Montreal, Canada, July 28th through 30. We'll be hearing all about it today on the program from Tamara Herman, a Montreal activist and spokesperson with the Popular Mobilization Against the WTO. That's all coming up right after your anti-business report. Yes, back from 3 weeks on vacation, anti-business comes to you this week with info about the WTO Montreal mini ministerial meeting happening next week. Stay tuned to Rockin' the Boat. Auntie Bee's Knees coming up first.
Hello, this is Auntie Bee's Knees with your business report for the week of July 21st. Activists are mobilizing for protests against the World Trade Organization, or WTO, as representatives for this multilateral trade policy body meet at a mini-ministerial this weekend in Montreal. Already fears that clashes between protesters and security will disrupt the meetings have prompted management of Montreal's Queen Elizabeth Hotel to cancel reservations for more than 24 WTO ministers who will be moving to an as-yet undisclosed location for the closed-door negotiations. About 25 trade ministers from key WTO member countries are scheduled to meet in Montreal from July 28th to 30th in preparation for a ministerial of all 146 WTO member states in Cancun in September. The Montreal meeting will be chaired by Canada's International Trade Minister, Pierre Pettigrew, and follows similar meetings in Sydney, Australia last November, Tokyo, Japan last February, and Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt last month. These mini-ministerials have attracted strong criticism from observers and even from WTO member governments, who argue that the informal meetings are profoundly anti-democratic. WTO mini-ministerials bring together invited trade ministers from 25 to 30 countries to grease the palms of consensus on areas of disagreement. Successes can then be presented to all 146 members of the WTO at the full ministerial as a fait accompli. Selection criteria for the countries invited to these mini-ministerials are unknown, and no written records are kept of the privately held discussions. Nonetheless, decisions are made and agendas are set at these closed-door meetings that affect the entire WTO membership in the absence of a majority of WTO members. Building on common ground shared in the struggles against capitalism, imperialism, and war, Montreal's Popular Mobilization Against the WTO has planned 5 days of education, creative resistance, marches, and direct actions to expose and resist this unfair system and the WTO as a whole, promoting an alternative vision that emphasizes self-determination, dignity, and justice. The WTO has been the object of heated opposition from activists since protests were organized to disrupt the organization's third ministerial in Seattle in November 1999. 4 years later, the anti-globalization movement continues to struggle against the unchecked privatization and capitalist expansion bolstered by the WTO's multilateral trade policies. The WTO was launched in 1995 to provide global economic governance in an era of capitalist globalization and to overhaul the general agreements on trade and tariffs developed after the Second World War. Nearly 20 agreements on tariffs and trade were introduced as a comprehensive set of multilateral trading regulations that would eliminate power and coercion from trade relations. The WTO promised that its new policies would hold powerful and weak economies to a common set of rules backed by effective enforcement and dispute resolution. At the WTO, it was claimed, the world's most powerful economy, the U.S., and an impoverished nation like Rwanda, each had one vote and therefore held equal power in shaping international trade policy. The WTO held its first ministerial in Singapore in 1996. At this meeting, the WTO, International Monetary Fund, and World Bank issued a joint declaration stating that their major goals would be to harmonize policies of international trade, finance, and development. The result would be peace and prosperity for every citizen of the globe. It was a triumphant moment for the neoliberal ideology, which supported the accelerated privatization of state-owned assets and services, the deregulation of industry, and multilateral trade liberalization to strengthen market forces and remove the barriers to cross-border trade imposed by governments and organized labor. Since its inception, the policies of the WTO, alongside those of the International Monetary Fund and World Bank, have been instrumental in pursuing this neoliberal agenda. Today, these three organizations find themselves under a steady barrage of criticism and opposition for their mismanagement of economic crises around the world. Structural adjustment programs designed by the International Monetary Fund to accelerate privatization, deregulation, and trade liberalization have instead led to economic stagnation, increased poverty, and growing inequality in developing economies around the world. WTO enforcement and dispute resolution policies have been used to undermine governments' abilities to implement progressive labor, social, health, safety, or environmental laws. Meanwhile, WTO trade negotiations have become deadlocked as competing interests have been unable to make headway on a number of crucial issues. A new agreement on agriculture has yet to be negotiated as the U.S., Europe, and Japan refuse to eliminate their massive subsidies to domestic farmers, and as the U.S. and Canada fight Europe over market access for genetically modified foods. Access to generic pharmaceuticals in poor countries has been thwarted by U.S. lobbyists seeking to protect their patent rights. Negotiations on patents themselves have been stalled as nations confront North America's drive to control the production of life-saving medicines and to patent life forms for use in biotechnological innovation. Developing nations are voicing frustration at the costs of neoliberal policies, the lack of transparency in WTO policy development, and the bullying maneuvers of U.S. representatives at the negotiating table. Meanwhile, the U.S. seems prepared to abandon the WTO altogether in pursuit of unilateral free trade agreements that more closely fit the American agenda. The Bush administration's ambivalence towards the WTO stems largely from the fact that the U.S. has lost a number of rulings at the WTO, rulings that may serve the interests of global capital as a whole but are harmful to American business interests. Critics also point to U.S. stalemating at the WTO as evidence of a larger trend towards protectionist economic policies by the Bush administration. Despite its free market rhetoric, the Bush administration has been decidedly protectionist when it comes to trade, investment, and the disbursement of government funds. Whereas the Clinton administration placed primary importance on the expansion of the global economy as the basis of prosperity, the Bush administration has pursued U.S. economic goals at the expense of other key economies in the face of a global economic downturn. For example, Clinton and his trade representative Robert Rubin pushed for a strong dollar policy in the mid-1990s to stimulate growth in Japan and Germany so that these countries could serve as markets for U.S. goods and services. Under Bush, a weak U.S. dollar has made U.S. exports more competitive at home and abroad while crippling economic growth in the EU, Canada, and Japan, pushing the interests of U.S. corporate elites above those of the global capitalist class as a whole. Under the Bush administration, U.S. economic policy has also become more intimately enmeshed with U.S. goals of military supremacy and political hegemony. In May, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Zoellick told reporters that countries seeking free trade agreements with the U.S. would have to pass muster on more than trade and economic criteria in order to be eligible. At a minimum, countries would be expected to cooperate with U.S. foreign policy and domestic security goals, along with 11 other criteria that would guide the U.S. selection of potential free trade partners. The effects of this policy trend have already been observed in recent U.S. negotiations with Australia, Poland, and Chile, where freer trade has meant preferential arms deals and strict rules for customs and immigration. In contrast, agreements negotiated by the WTO have been premised on the naively optimistic assumption that economics and politics operate in different realms. An international rule-based trading regime, it was claimed in the mid-90s, would prevent wars by eliminating unjust barriers to wealth creation. But the free trade mantra has not prevented wars from spreading. Instead, the age of intensified neoliberal expansion has coincided with an escalation of violence by powerful nations against the weak. The third WTO ministerial in Seattle took place just months after the world's dominant economies under the guise of NATO bombed Serbia and Kosovo. The fourth ministerial at Doha was inaugurated during a U.S. military campaign against Afghanistan, one of the poorest countries in the world. And the fifth ministerial in Cancun will take place just weeks after the U.S. and Britain have been forced to admit that they waged a baseless war against the people of Iraq. Though the WTO has not been directly responsible for these acts of U.S.-led aggression, the WTO has certainly been powerless to prevent them. WTO negotiations have also been premised on the notion that loosening restrictions on cross-border trade will help developing economies. History, however, suggests the opposite. While the dominant economies of North America and Europe have perpetuated a myth that their wealth was built on free trade, in fact, almost every nation which has amassed wealth has done so through imperial exploitation, piracy, war, or protectionist economic policies. Now, at the WTO, wealthy nations are requiring developing countries to pursue economic policies that preclude the use of protectionist measures for domestic industry. The result is that poorer nations are forced to access wealth by opening their doors to foreign investment, by which a majority of the benefits return to multinational headquarters in Europe and North America. The hypocrisy of this agenda is brought into sharp relief by recent trends towards protectionism in the U.S. and by the failure of the WTO to make headway on any of the key promises made at Doha, originally hailed as the launch of a development round of WTO trade negotiations. This so-called development round has merely allowed the trade representatives of wealthy states to pat themselves on the back for working to end poverty and strife, while the world's major economic players pursue their own agendas through bilateral trade agreements, protectionist economic measures, lawsuits, military campaigns, and backroom deals at many ministerials, the G8 and NATO. So, for heaven's sake, take the time to speak out against this sorry state of affairs, write a letter to your trade representative, and think about investing in a trip to sunny Montreal or seaside Cancun this summer. That's a wrap for this week's Business Report. Signing off, this is Auntie Bee's Knees reminding you to put your money where your mouth is and invest ethically.
And that is Auntie Bee's Knees from CKLN Radio in Toronto, Canada. And with more now on the upcoming WTO mini-ministerial meeting in Montreal, we turn to Tamara Herman, a Montreal activist and spokesperson with the Popular Mobilization Against the WTO, an umbrella group which is organizing the 5 days of education, creative resistance, demonstrations, and direct action that will expose and resist the profit-driven WTO and promote an alternative vision which prioritizes self-determination, dignity, and global justice. Tamara Herman from Montreal, thanks for joining me tonight on Rockin' the Boat.
Thank you, Vinny.
Tell us first about the mobilization. How many people are you expecting there in Montreal, and why do you feel it's so important to organize against the WTO and their policies?
Well, I think it's crucial that we organize against the WTO and their policies. We've seen in Montreal and all over the world the type of violence, exploitation, oppression, and repression that comes with the WTO's trade-driven agenda. And it's something that the activist community in Montreal has been mobilizing against for years now. We have a pretty long history of fighting institutions such as the WTO and the FTAA and the G20, to name but a few in our region. As to how many people are coming, it's hard to say. The mini-ministerial was called by Canada's international trade minister, Pierre Pettigrew, and he gave us about 2 months' notice. It's kind of an informal type WTO meeting. So it's crucial that we're there because it's one of the, basically, the negotiations that they're trying to hammer out in Montreal are crucial to the new round that they're pushing in Cancun. So it's really important. However, it didn't leave us with an enormous amount of time to raise funds to bring people in. Having said that, we're expecting both busloads of people from other regions in Canada, in Quebec, in the eastern U.S. So we're hoping to get a couple thousand people out on the streets and in our workshops for the 5 days of action.
Your website is montreal.resist.ca, correct?
Mm-hmm.
On there, it says at the bottom there's a note which stresses that the popular mobilization against the WTO strongly encourages affinity groups operating within the framework of the PGA hallmarks to organize autonomous actions in order to shut down and disrupt the WTO meetings. Can you describe maybe for us these principles of unity and maybe how they came about?
Well, it's basically the PGA principles, People's Global Action, springs from a movement that was kind of spearheaded at first by the Zapatistas in 94, I believe. And what it was setting up a framework for an analysis that's based on international solidarity that recognizes that the strategies and tactics different groups use to resist international institutions and neoliberal globalization are all relative to the particular situation that they're facing. So there's no condemning, for example, violence by, say, the Zapatistas who are defending their well-being and their lives in southern Mexico, as an example. There's a huge value on the dignity of human lives and on the approach that we can't reform institutions which are based on a system which is fundamentally flawed, and that our resistance has to be tied to the fight against capitalism, against patriarchy, against racism, because as long as we have these systems at work, institutions like the WTO will keep springing up. So so when we call for actions, we do this in the framework of this international solidarity movement, and we do this recognizing that the actions in the popular education, which we're going to create over the next, well, next week in Montreal, are part of this international movement. So when we say calls for direct action by affinity groups, that's also in recognition of the fact that as a mobilization movement, what we're capable of creating together is, in this case, mass mobilizations and snake marches and also workshops and the like. But we definitely want affinity groups, to independent groups, to come out and to do actions that fit these principles, that fit in this analysis and this respect for human life. And those are the type of actions that we're hoping will spring up in Montreal.
Maybe we can go into a little bit about that. Your website also kind of lays out the framework of the days of action there. And as you mentioned, there's going to be one, like in the beginning, some teach-ins and workshops kind of familiarizing people with some of the issues involved. And then I'm interested to hear about how the street actions will take place, considering the recent news that the major hotel where the meetings were to take place seems to have pulled out for fears of, riots in the street maybe, but or police, you know, wielding batons, crashing through their lobby or something. But maybe we can talk about the logistics of things and how things have changed, as you mentioned. I mean, there hasn't been a lot of time to organize things, and now suddenly, with the changing scenery, the secrecy also around it, how has that affected the organizing?
Well, in a way, it hasn't affected things that much because our organizing process is so open. It's funny that you mentioned the hotel switch. The hotel which we, and that includes the mainstream journalists even in Montreal, assume that the meeting will take place in is only two blocks away. So tactically, it really doesn't change things for us. What we did from the beginning, and of course, especially with this mini-ministerial, because it's not necessarily a quote-unquote official WTO meeting, there's very little transparency. It took us a long time to figure out what days they were meeting on, who they're meeting with. We still don't have all the answers. Neither does the press. Mm-hmm. We had to wait a little while to find out exactly where. And so what the only thing that we could really commit to was popular education and starting points for our marches. And we kind of located them in pretty much central areas close to the business district, which of course contains many of the pillars of capitalism and WTO-type institutions and policymakers and whatnot mm-hmm. in downtown Montreal. So we kind of had to kind of organize based on our gut feeling as to where the meeting would be, as to other places, other offices, other agencies close by, which we knew were related to the WTO and whatnot. But in terms of the hotel moving, we held a press conference about that a few days ago because for us it was a victory, because just a month before, Canada's international trade minister, Pierre Pettigrew, had said that the anti-globalization movement was over and that he foresaw absolutely no resistance to the WTO. So I don't think the Queen Elizabeth Hotel, which is where the meetings were to take place, necessarily agreed with Pettigrew. And from what the media have said and from what we know, the hotel was more concerned with, as you said, baton-wielding police hitting their guests accidentally over the heads as they were aiming for protesters during the days of action. So
you're tuned to Rockin' the Boat on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM in California, 91.3 FM in Olympia, Washington, www.freakradio.org on the World Wide Web. My name's the V-Man. I'm speaking with Tamara Herman. She's a Montreal activist spokesperson with the Popular Mobilization Against the WTO, who are organizing Days of Action upcoming July 28th through 30th and around those days as well. Actions against the WTO mini-meeting happening there. We have about 10 minutes left, Tamara, and maybe we can talk a bit about some of the meetings themselves. As you mentioned, this is sort of an informal affair, and these talks are off the record. There's no history of it. And it's really in meetings like this where the agendas are set and the policies kind of take shape, so that at the major summits like in Cancun, it's sort of just a cakewalk vacation. And some of the things that are going to be discussed sort of off the record are like biopatenting and generic prescription drugs, import tariffs and the like. And agriculture is big on the list. Maybe you can talk about how some of these issues are linked to struggles there in Montreal and Canada.
Well, Montreal, it has a bit of a history as maybe being one of the more marginalized cities in Canada due to a variety of factors. Anyways, all that to say that there's a really strong community movement here and there's a really strong activist community. And we've been working a lot with issues of poverty, for example. And we know that when Canada begins to privatize its services and in Montreal hospitals are slowly being privatized, we're still not in the type of system that you're in the States necessarily, but the privatization of services have really, really affected some of the more poverty-stricken communities in Montreal. So recently we just had a tent city event where we took over a public space and erected tents as a symbolism of squats and of the housing crisis in Montreal and of the difficulty for people who don't have access to essential services in this type of context. So poverty is big on the agenda for us, and when we look at the new issue of investment, which some are looking to push on the WTO in Cancun, I mean, for us it comes with a lot of bombs, and it's something that we're definitely going to be fighting against. Another key issue here is racism, because ever since the terrorist attacks in the United States in September of 2001, Canada has implemented a whole new set of laws and of resolutions, and it's turned into the arbitrary targeting of people of color. So there's been quite a lot of activist movements, different groups working with refugee and immigrant communities and fighting deportations, and we see a direct link to the type of globalization that the WTO promotes, because while doors and borders are being opened to capital, they're being closed to people, and the reason is because the exploitation of human resources is an intricate part of the capitalist agenda and the WTO agenda. So both these campaigns are really working strongly on the WTO mobilizations. At the same time, we have a lot of networks with groups in the South. We've talked with a lot of our comrades and our solidarity networks in Africa who are fighting, as you said, the TRIPS, the patent laws, fighting for generic medication for AIDS patients. As well as groups in South America who are fighting against biropiracy. And we also have a network here called Union Paysanne, which works with farmers all over the world. And so they're monitoring very closely the agreement on agriculture, and they're doing a lot of education on those issues as well.
You mentioned earlier that it goes some of the critiques go beyond just the structure of the WTO itself, and it includes this overall structural framework of capitalism. Maybe we can end on some of your visions for what the future looks like beyond capitalism and how we can work together across borders to create that world.
It's funny because oftentimes the press will say to us, all you're doing is criticizing things. You're not proposing any alternatives. And to that, the type of criticisms that we make are in themselves alternatives. For example, when we talk about services and we say services should not be privatized, what we're saying is that people's basic needs are not an opportunity for profit for corporations, and that we have to have local structures set up to meet those needs, and that people have to be at the forefront of any type of policy or any type of programming or planning and not capital. So of course that's right at the heart of it. A lot of the way that we organize as well is related to kind of an alternative view of society. We organize collectively, non-hierarchically. We're really careful about who makes decisions, how they're made, and whatnot. We're really careful about power dynamics and keeping things open. And that in itself is an alternative because it goes completely against the way our countries are being run and the way the international governance institutions are running themselves. When we talk about anti-capitalism, we're not just talking about anti-state, anti-institution, anti-government, but we're talking about a type of organizing and a type of society just based on us, based on our right to self-determination, because that's really at the heart of it. And there's absolutely no legitimacy in an organization like the WTO, which has met resistance both within and without and all over the world, coming into Montreal and telling us this is how our lives are going to be run and this is how our world is going to be run. So, yeah, I think in in the end, self-determination, social justice, and a lot of non-hierarchical organizing and looking into different ways of running society together.
Been speaking tonight with Tamara Herman, a Montreal activist spokesperson with the Popular Mobilization Against the WTO, organizing days of action to confront the WTO mini-meeting in Montreal from July 28th through 30th. Tamara, where can people get more info about what's happening there, and where do you think this is going to go from here after Cancun?
Well, like you mentioned before, our website is montreal.resist.ca. We have 5 really busy days of action coming up, and there's tons of information on our website, tons of materials we've written, publications, and good links. As to where it's going to go from here, we have an anti-FTA solidarity network in Montreal up and running, and they're already mobilizing for Cancun. We even have people actually going on bike brigades, leaving from Montreal, flying to Vancouver, and then maybe even passing Santa Cruz on the way down to Cancun. So there's lots of stuff going on. If people are interested in finding out more about what we're doing and what we have in store, we also invite them to email us. The email address is resistomc, that's resisteomc, that means resist the WTO in French, at resist.ca, so please feel free to drop us a line.
And we'll follow this in the coming days as the mobilization takes shape there in Montreal and try to bring our listeners updates. I thank you for joining me tonight, Tamara.
Thank you.
All right, it's been a pleasure.
Bye.
Good night. And that's going to wrap it up here for us tonight on Rockin' the Boat. Just a quick note that activists in Santa Cruz are indeed mobilizing delegations to travel to Cancun, Mexico, to confront the WTO ministers in September from the 9th through the 15th. Meetings in Santa Cruz to organize that mobilization are happening Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, 515 Broadway at Ocean. And hopefully if people are interested in finding out what they can do here to help kind of move this mobilization against capitalist structures along, do call 423-1626 to find out more, or just show up Wednesday nights, 7 o'clock at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. That's going to wrap it up tonight for Rockin' the Boat. Tune in again tomorrow. We'll be discussing a local labor issue with a corporate chain, Pete's Coffee, and some of the workers' complaints there. I happened to go down there today and have some very interesting audio. So I encourage you to tune in again tomorrow night for another edition of Rockin' the Boat here on Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, www.freakradio.org. Thanks for listening.
We are born of nature, and in nature we will die. Oh, and if we don't make it, it's not because we didn't try. No, it's not because we didn't try. They say they will incorporate the world over my dead body, over my dead body, over my dead body, over mine. They have all the money, but we have the will, and I would rather be a match than a paper dollar bill. Yes, I would. Yes, I would. They have the guns. All we are is flesh and blood, but we will multiply our numbers and drown them in our flood. Yes, we will. Yes, we will. They say they will incorporate the world over my dead body.